Hello and welcome to this podcast about the May 2020 meeting of the International Accounting Standards Board on the amendments to IFRS 17 project. My name is Vitalina Kabirnik. I am a member of technical staff. With me today remotely is Daryl Scott, a board member. At the May meeting, the board finalized discussion of the amendments to IFRS 17 by considering the SWIP issues. SWIP issues are the small issues identified in the balloting process. For example, items identified by the staff when updating the drafting of the amendments, or items arising from reviews by board members and external parties. The staff also considered all the feedback from stakeholders that has been received on the papers discussed by the board over the last few months in order to identify any SWIP issues. One of the areas of the board's discussion was around reinsurance contracts held and staff recommendation on identifying losses on underlying insurance contracts. Daryl, could you please provide your observation about this discussion?
Thanks, Vita. So those of you who follow IFRS 17 closely will know that this standard, like many other IFRS standards, requires an immediate recognition of a loss when a contract is expected to be onerous. So as part of this overall amendment process, we had previously proposed that an entity can recognize a recovery of those losses on initial recognition if and to the extent that the contracts are covered by a pre-existing reinsurance contract. In the last couple of months, we've agreed during our re-deliberations that this would apply irrespective of the type of reinsurance contract held. And for those of you who are specifically familiar with the exposure draft, you'll remember the word proportionate that was introduced. Part of our re-deliberations have removed that restriction requiring the reinsurance contract to be a proportionate contract. So during the drafting and pre-balloting process, staff noted that a single onerous group may in fact include both contracts that are covered by a reinsurance contract and contracts that are not covered by a reinsurance contract. And because the wording that we have in the standard refers to individual contracts being added to a group, staff felt that this may lead some to the assumption that accounting must happen at a contract level. So the staff asked the board to confirm that the group remains the primary unit of account, and that as a consequence of that, entities should use a systematic and rational approach to allocating losses between the contracts that are covered by the reinsurance and those contracts that are not. I think this is an interesting area. The board had quite a bit of discussion around, I think at the first instance, whether entities should be required to first see whether there was sufficient information available to apply this requirement at a lower level, at a contract level. And we decided not to introduce this additional requirement. And also why in this specific instance, we were going to provide guidance suggesting or requiring the use of a systematic and rational allocation method, but in other places we didn't. And we concluded that this was because in this instance, the words in the standard seemed to steer an entity towards individual contracts, and so it was necessary for us to provide this guidance. I think it's important to say the board agreed with the staff recommendation pretty much as it was worded in the staff paper, but subject to a clarification. And this clarification distinguished between initial recognition of the contracts when it is likely that an entity will have more information about the contracts it's adding, and subsequent measurement of those contracts over time when an entity might have less information available. And it took away what appeared otherwise to have been a very strict requirement that you use the identical methodology both initially and subsequently.
Thank you. Daryl, are there any other particular SWIP issues discussed at the board table that you would like to highlight?
Sure. And I think obviously at this stage of a project, like the amendment project, all of the decisions are important. But I think the other ones that I'd like to perhaps put a bit of focus on are the two SWIP issues we discussed that related specifically to things that happened before the initial recognition of an insurance contract. Now, again, for those familiar with IFRS 17, you'll know that the standard already requires an entity to include insurance acquisition cash flows that occur before the contract is recognized in the CSM of the group that that contract belongs to. I think this is one of those things that's easiest explained with an example. So if an entity pays a broker a commission before a contract is recognized, then applying this part of IFRS 17, that commission is included in determining the profitability, the future profitability of that particular contract. Determining the future profitability is determining the CSM, and the CSM is what is released as profit over the life of the contract. However, as written, and you might have heard my very careful use of words there, IFRS 17 only recognizes acquisition cash flows, so cash flows that relate to acquisition activities that occur before recognition. And so the two amendments we considered were to broaden the scope of this particular inclusion. The first relates to cash flows paid or received before the contract is recognized. So again, using an example, if a policyholder pays a premium before the contract is recognized, so before the due date that they have to pay that premium, obviously that's a cash payment, but it is not an acquisition cost. And so the staff proposed and the board agreed that other pre-recognition cash flows that are related to either a contract or to a group should also be included in CSM on initial recognition of the contract, and therefore go towards the determination of the profitability of that particular contract. The second element, or the second amendment that we discussed, is also perhaps best illustrated by an example. A standard like IFRS 9 might require the recognition of a liability to pay the broker I spoke about earlier, the commission, but only to pay that commission at some future date. Now, that clearly is an acquisition cash flow. There is an acquisition amount, but it is not a cash flow. And so under the current wording, it wouldn't be considered. And so the staff proposed, and we again agreed, that a qualifying insurance acquisition cost that is incurred and is recognized because of another IFRS, in the example I gave, IFRS 9, before the recognition of the insurance contract, should also be included in the CSM on date of recognition.
Thank you, Daryl. And I think the last question would be, what are the next steps following this May board meeting?
So, Vita, I think we're getting to a very exciting time of the process now. So as you mentioned in the earlier comments that you made, we've now gone through the initial pre-balloting phase where we've, from a board member perspective, had a look at the draft standard. We've passed that board standard to a few external reviewers to give us fatal flaws comments. The staff will now take the comments they've received from the board members, the comments they've received from those external reviewers, and the decisions that we've made in this month's board meeting, and incorporate those into the final amendment to IFRS 17 document. That document will come to the board members, I'm guessing, in the next week or two as a ballot document, requesting us to give it a final review and then to essentially assent to the publication of the document through our ballot process. And that means we're still in process, still in line to publish the final amendments to IFRS 17 by the end of June 2020. After that, we move into the stage which relates to communication and educational materials. And I think what we've undertaken to do is beyond the normal communication materials that we will publish along with the underlying document. We've also said that we'll publish a webcast or podcast type document that just leads people through the amendments we've made and helps people understand just what those amendments are and how they affect the application of IFRS 17 going forward.
Daryl, thank you for this summary of the IFRS 17 discussion and the May 2020 board meeting. As I said, this was our last discussion of amendments to IFRS 17 before the board finalizes the standard incorporating the amendments in June 2020. Thank you everyone for listening.